everyone, I'm Clemens and we are here at CTS in the office in Salzburg, and today we have our colleague from the TU Vienna with us, Stefan.
Hi Clemens.
And we are doing an interview today about what they did in the last 2.5 years, I think, or maybe more, regarding a digital twin project. And we will go from Stefan's vita into the technical topic, and yeah, let's introduce yourself.
Thanks a lot. Great to be here. A couple of details about me. My name is Stefan Jankovic. I'm a postdoctoral researcher at TU Wien. Finished my dissertation a couple of months ago and on the topic of digital twins in industrial plant operation. And together with you guys from CTS, we set up a digital twin for a direct air capture pilot plant. And I would like to talk about that today, technically what we achieved together, how your products helped us get there, and what the next steps are. Currently, I'm working on various research projects, mainly with the focus on process simulation, scale-up of industrial plants, and techno-economic analysis. But the main focus of my work is still digital twins. So to say how we can connect simulation models with live data from industrial plants, and use these models to better understand what happens inside the plants, and of course in the long term to optimize them.
So the introduction was really interesting, and I know that you not only worked alone in this topic with the digital twin, so who is the, I think, working group or study group around this whole direct air capture project in the digital twin?
Yeah, so I did my PhD thesis in the research group Industrial Plant Engineering and Application of Digital Methods. It's, let's say, a bit broad title. Specifically, we're looking at various thermochemical conversion technologies, mostly regarding renewable fuels production, so production of renewable synthetic natural gas, various liquid or other gaseous energy carriers. But we have also expanded into carbon capture technologies, such as the one that we're talking about today. And let's say methodologically, we're always looking to combine three different approaches. On the one hand, the experimental research, then the measurement technology needed to measure these things, also the modeling aspect, so that we actually understand on a deeper level what's happening in these processes and can afterwards replicate that also in the virtual world. And if we combine these three approaches, that's exactly where we get to the digital twin, which is, let's say, our new big topic that we are that we're applying to, let's say, any technology that comes our way.
Mm-hmm. So more or less you're following a three-tier model, so to say, and all combined you more or less get the best out of, or try to get the best out of your system or the process around it and optimize it. And I think last time when we visited you, you mentioned you are more or less now in a state where you finished the overall topic for the direct air capture, but now you're looking into edge cases and try to find, let's say, critical values or critical procedures where the direct air capture might not be as efficient as it could be.
I wouldn't say that we're actually quite finished with the research. I mean, the technology is there, it works, but there's still a lot of topics that need to be investigated. But you're right. One important question is definitely what is the, let's say, operational window that the technology can operate in. On the one hand, where is the best operating point? But on the other hand, also, how can we expand this window to, let's say, edge cases where the plant didn't work as well up to now? Inside the plant, we have a different combination of parameters we can use. Some are, let's say, more energy efficient. Some allow us to get a larger amount of CO2 out of the air. And here is just a bit of a trade-off which operating point we want to actually use. And in combination with the simulation models, we can more rigorously defend these assumptions that we take for the operating points.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we need to go a step back and let you explain what exactly is a direct air capture and for what can this be used in the industry, or maybe not only in industry, maybe also in general society?
Gladly. So in general, let's say carbon capture or carbon dioxide removal refers to technologies that remove carbon dioxide that's already inside the atmosphere. So not technologies that mitigate the emissions, but actually remove carbon dioxide that's already out there. There are various processes, usually with solid or liquid sorbents, that selectively capture the CO2 out of the ambient air, and then the CO2 can either be used for various industrial processes, or on the other hand, it can also be permanently stored underground. These are the two options in general. And our technology specifically, we look at the solid sorbent DAC process. So we have solid particles where we blow ambient air through. CO2 is selectively absorbed at the surface of these particles, and the ambient air with less or no CO2 exits the system. Then this adsorbent that is full of CO2 is transported to another chamber, where then the temperature is increased. We add steam as a purging agent, and we reduce the pressure. All of these three effects help to get the CO2 off the particle again. And we have a new, fresh, regenerated adsorbent that we can use again at the beginning of the process. And the gas that is released from the particles is then a mixture of CO2 and steam. We can cool it off, the steam condenses, becomes water, and we have a pure CO2 stream, again, for the applications I mentioned before, either for utilization in various industrial processes or for permanent storage.
Okay. And when we now take your research project and compare it to already existing direct air capture or CO2 absorber or CO2 separators, can you describe the difference, or is this already maybe too much in detail, which is more or less under heavy restrictions?
In general, I can say that our great advantage is that we separate these two chambers from each other, so the adsorption and the desorption, which means that we don't have a large thermal mass that we need to heat and cool every time we switch from adsorption to regeneration or desorption. So definitely the defining characteristic is that we simply have a lower energy demand than other competing technologies.
Okay. And since energy is money,
exactly,
it's good, yeah.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay.
Additionally, a large part of our of the energy needed for the technology can come from waste heat. So we need some amount of electricity, but a large amount can also come just from low temperature waste heat, which again broadens the application because we don't need to put in lots of high value electricity to the mm-hmm. process.
Maybe I'm a bit biased because I already saw your 20-foot container and where everything resides in it. Regarding the current setup of your CO2 separator, mm-hmm. which parts were done within your research group? So I think everything, but which was done in particular by you, by your colleagues?
To be honest, it was a collaboration with an external investor. And during the duration of the project, two startups were also created. So this is a collaboration with all of the parties. To be honest, my part was less on the technology side itself, but more on the, say, digitalization modeling side. But no, basically everything from the ground up was done within a research group, and also, of course, builds upon knowledge from other projects that we had in the past mm-hmm. 10, 15 years. That's basically okay. It.
Let's hear your definition of a digital twin, because this is not the very first one for you, so you already had several digital twin projects, so let's elaborate on this.
Gladly. I mean, I wrote my PhD thesis on the topic and researched it quite a bit, and I found that in 50 different research papers you have 100 different definitions, so it's very, very vague what a digital twin actually is and what it should be capable of doing. What I, for myself, then chose is, let's say, rather a broad definition. A digital twin needs to have three things. So there needs to be an actual plant that it connects to. So just simply a simulation model by itself is not a digital twin. Then this model needs to be connected with live data from the plant. So it's not enough that you manually copy some Excel data into a simulation model and calculate it afterwards. That's not a digital twin. I mean, it depends strongly on the technology, whether real time or live data means, I don't know, millisecond or second resolution, but for other technologies, an hour or day resolution will also be enough. But still, it needs to be close enough to the actual events that you can influence future events. And finally, it simply needs to be able to fulfill a set of requirements that we set for a digital twin. So there's not the one service that a digital twin needs to provide. It doesn't have to mean that every digital twin needs to be able to do, I don't know, help with predictive maintenance or plant monitoring or plant optimization. These are all possible applications, but there is not one thing that specifically defines a digital twin.
You mentioned the resolution within the digital twin. So mm-hmm. talking about milliseconds or seconds or maybe hours or longer.
Yeah.
Is your process a slow process, or how would you describe it?
Yes, I would describe it as, let's say, rather slow. So it's a batch process, and one batch takes, let's say, from an hour to a couple of hours, depending on the operating point. And the main conditions that influence the process, such as, let's say, ambient conditions such as temperature, humidity, also change rather slowly, let's say, in the minute to hour range. In our case, I believe, let's say, quarter hour to an hour, 2 hours would be the range that we will be looking at to monitor the plant. But let's say just for the performance of the plant. Of course, if it's about some safety issues, then we need to be much faster. If a pipe bursts or if some temperature rises over a limit, but these things are, in my opinion, should not be part of digital twin, but should actually be part directly of the plant control system, which has simply much higher demands for availability, for safety, than the digital twin, which, let's say, has many more services and possibilities to serve, but doesn't have the requirements to be up, 99.999% of the time.
Yeah. Okay, and regarding the direct control system, this was also written by you, a team member?
Not directly by us, but by a partner company that actually did the plant manufacturing. Yeah. The plant control system was developed and then, of course, updated during the first tests by the actual partner company that did the manufacturing for us.
Okay. And so regarding cycle times, these are also then rather slow compared to probably other processes in other industries. So is this something that benefits you to build the digital twin?
I wouldn't actually say that it benefits us a lot. I mean, it makes it a bit easier that we don't need to have a very, let's say, large computing capacity, that we need to have our models run, let's say, in a millisecond or second time. But for us, it doesn't really make a difference whether the cycle time is 5 minutes or an hour, because the models usually take, say, somewhere between 5, 10, 15 seconds to run. So anything that's more than that is basically the same to us.
Okay. We now talked already a lot about technical stuff, but what were the requirements from the other parties, from the external investor maybe, and also from the technical university?
Oh yeah, so there we had actually two, let's say, different wishes or different directions that they wanted us to develop in. On the one hand, the point of view of the plant operators. For them, the digital twin was actually there to just assist them in the daily operation of the pilot plant, to help them with the operation itself, but also to help them afterwards with validation of the data, or the evaluation of the data. So for them, we designed, let's say, various nice looking dashboards so they can see in real time what's happening, catch any problems early on. And we designed standardized reports for them. So after a experimental campaign, they don't have to export data, manually copy paste it into an Excel sheet and do their calculations there, but just have to click on a button and they get a nice couple pages long PDF report where they can see how well the experiment went. And of course, for them, the prerequisite to even get there was that we have a nice centralized data storage, because of course, we have the one PLC inside this, as you mentioned, inside the pilot plant, inside the container. But we also use a couple of external measurement devices that are not bound to this pilot plant itself, but are also used for other experiments. So we simply have 3, 4, 5 different data sources that all use different protocols, that all save their measurement data in a different way. So this is just to build the basis to even get a digital twin, we needed to have a nice centralized way with consistent timestamps, with consistent tag names, just so we have everything in one spot. And building up from that, then we did, as I said, the dashboards, the reporting, data export for further analysis. And on the other hand, we have the side of the investor, of the, let's say, long-term project development. There we looked at possibilities how digital twin could actually benefit the operation in the long term. So we wanted to see how could it optimize plant performance, how could it maybe help people who don't understand the technology as deeply as we do with troubleshooting, or maybe even allow us to help them remotely with problems they have. So this is more, we only partially implemented that in our pilot plant, but it was more of a demo or a proof of concept showcase that we presented then also to our investors.
So all those prerequisites and requirements pushed into the direction of Immation, I would say. But was this also the decision path for you, or how was this whole process around choosing the right tool for the job? Mm-hmm. And did you have to more or less argue with your investors or with Technical University to use this one? How was this setting around it?
Luckily, no. Luckily, we have, let's say, a big freedom from the one side, from the project investors, but also from our supervisors at the Technical University. We have, let's say, a research goal that we try to reach, but it's, let's say, our own choice which tools we use concretely to get there. To be honest, yeah, I hadn't heard of Immation up to the moment that we started using it. A colleague of mine then heard, let's say, of our use case, of our problem, and then mentioned that we could try using that. And yeah, it was a perfect fit, to be honest, from the first moment, because it actually did the thing that we didn't want to do. It's not so difficult, to click on export and then get some Excel data, but it's still just boring, annoying, and it's also again another source for errors, because it's trivial things. Some measurement devices use the local time zone, some use UTC, and you probably never remember which is which, and you just spend your time on useless things that can be spent on more important questions in our research. So this is where Immation definitely helped us. And no, it was a pretty straightforward process. So yeah, after the colleague recommended the software to me, we contacted you, and it was pretty, let's say, in a couple of weeks, we had a prototype running, saw that it worked, and yeah, just started building on from there and never looked back.
Luckily. If we now compare the starting phase that you had with Immation and not knowing even the world or the company around it, and compare it to your previously done digital twins, what are the biggest differences here?
So yeah, for one use case, we had already developed a digital twin. That was a different project where we looked at the conversion of wood and wood waste, wood and other waste materials into synthetic natural gas. And for that, we developed a digital twin based on a Microsoft Azure cloud solution. I mean, it was, to my opinion, it was also really, really great success, the project. We got where we wanted. We managed to connect, simulation models with the system. We could calculate variables that couldn't be measured before, at least couldn't be measured in real time before. We managed to add a model predictive controller. So the plant itself, the whole system definitely worked. But we saw a couple of downsides with the, let's say, Microsoft Azure Cloud solution. Well, not specifically with the Azure Cloud solution, but in general with the, let's say, self-done, self-programmed solution. It was definitely a lot of overhead. So things that in our minds would be just trivial, like creating some dashboards, some simple graphs, some input fields, suddenly required actual programming work. Expertise that we didn't have in-house, that luckily project partners had, but still it's just another layer that you have to get through, another hoop you have to jump to. So we didn't have all of these configuration possibilities in our hands. And yeah, it just took definitely longer. So in that case, it took, let's say, in the order of magnitude of months before we got the first data from our plant actually into the cloud, then into a dashboard, into simulation models. These are things that we managed with Immation in, let's say, a couple of days. Simply a huge time difference. And yeah, the other big thing is that we simply need less expertise. I can train a colleague at least the basics of Immation in a day or two, but we definitely won't get a cloud programmer that knows all of MS Azure's tools in this time frame. So I wouldn't want to only say negative things about the cloud solution. We definitely had some. I would say it's a bit even more open, a bit more freer. In Immation, you do have some, let's say, some framework that you have to follow. But yeah, if you get used to it, I wouldn't say that this has ever actually hindered us to get the tools to work that we want. And what would also possibly speak a bit more in the direction of the cloud solution origins in general to a self-programmed solution is that, of course, have lower license fees, less vendor lock-in. But in our case, yeah, we just did the math, did the trade-offs, and we chose the Inmation software simply because it saved us so much time and headache, let's say. And it just works out of the box. Yeah, you don't have to do a lot of troubleshooting.
Very great insights. Thanks. I'm really interested in this whole, let's say, cloud situation, and also Microsoft thing. Since a few years, they have this, it's not Data Fabric, but it's called Microsoft Fabric. Mm-hmm. So probably an evolution of what maybe you used back then.
Possibly.
But you didn't have your hands on this?
No, we haven't. Back then we used the Microsoft IoT Hub, as a central connection node for everything. Possibly it's easier nowadays. Yeah, but no, we haven't had experience with that concrete software solution.
So after those months integrating with the cloud solution and having, let's say, a starting phase where you personally was involved, and after, let's say, 2 or 3 months, if you compare this one now to Inmation and say you need to learn Lua development, you probably have more coding involved, let's say coding analogies, maybe using JSON, which wasn't maybe known before. And how was this for you?
Yeah, if I say it's a bit of a roller coaster of emotions at the beginning.
Yeah, roller coaster of emotions, yeah.
Yeah, no.
And Lua is hard to learn at the beginning, yeah.
Definitely. I mean, not only Lua, but in the beginning, the Inmation was really great. You know, everything worked. You have the nice green light. Data is coming in, but then, you know, when you realistically try to get some more complex tools, you see, okay, it's not trivial. It does take some time getting into. But then, after you get, let's say, out of the low, you finally start to understand what you're actually doing. You understand how the individual objects work with each other. What's actually possible. And that's also the phase that you guys really, really helped us with. Thanks a lot for that.
You're welcome.
When I actually had the feeling that I understood how the software works, then it was really great again, because then, yeah, I knew what the possibilities, what the limitations were. And yeah, I mean, Lua development is not easy, but to be honest, yeah, I was not really a programmer. I understand how code works. I can do some simple coding tasks, but you know, there's so many, many AI tools out there. And we're not actually building any, let's say, mission critical tools or safety critical tools. So basically, yeah, nowadays we use AI tools, let it program the code snippets for us. We test them and then we use them. So yeah, definitely, I wouldn't say that I ever became a Lua professional, but a advanced user.
Yeah.
And nowadays, in my opinion, I believe I've still only scratched the surface and used probably 10-20% of the available tools inside the software. But yeah, they work for us and we're really happy with them. And I need to contact you much less now. So yeah, you gave me a great running start. And I'm able to do, let's say, most of the troubleshooting or new service development myself now.
How many hours you put in a week in average to learn and get yourself running in this environment? Because when I think back to my days when I started with Inmation, I was totally new to OPC. I pretty well understood the network topologies and how things are connected on a physical basis. Mm-hmm. So this helped me a lot. But having access to the physical equipment eases things up, and if you understand them, you understand the bigger picture. But how was this for you, and how much effort you put in to get on the level where you are now?
It's difficult to say. I have to say, I mean, my starting point was pretty similar to yours. So yeah, I knew some basics of network technology, but had absolutely no idea about OPC UA or other, let's say, MQTT, Modbus, absolutely nothing. That only came with time. At the beginning, I would say I had to put in probably 2 to 3, 4 months to really dive into it. And during this time, I really tried to do mainly the Inmation programming work. So let's say 20, 30 hours a week. And this is also the time that we actually built and developed the tools that we're using now. Afterwards, during the next phase, it was more just troubleshooting. It was more adding of individual components. So nowadays, I would say I maybe dedicate half a day a week to that, if even sometimes even less. Yeah, as I said, on the one hand, the things work easier now because I know what I'm doing. And on the other hand, simply we have most of the tools that we need, and my colleagues which use it every day, they, let's say, use the basic services available in Data Studio and Web Studio that we developed, but don't develop any new tools right now.
Mm-hmm. You previously said it's rather easy to onboard a new employee to your animation system or to your mm-hmm. Whole project. And I know you're already crafting in the background an educational program. Mm-hmm. How is this in combination working? And yeah, do you think about bringing more people into your project, or is this more or less right now covered and you're looking forward to new projects?
So right now, this project is covered by the staff that we have. But we're using the software now also for completely different pilot plants. So again, as I said, this, for example, the renewable fuels sector. And yeah, here I simply see that it's a intuitive user interface. It all looks like, let's say, normal Windows program. You have lots of drag and drop and right-click context menus. Everything just more or less works as you would expect it. So at least for the basic tasks such as creating diagrams, looking up values. It is very, very quick to onboard someone to Inmation. If we will go a bit deeper into, as I said, developing of tools, developing of reporting items, I would say it would take longer, but still shorter than me at the beginning, because simply now there is one expert in-house that can guide the next generation, or however you want to call it. But yeah, it's definitely much simpler than, I don't know, having to explain the PLC programming, or then having to actually design visualizations on the PLC. This is much more intuitive in Inmation. Mm-hmm. Also the difficult phase also came a bit from that not only that we had to develop our own tools, but that I have the feeling that for some cases we are really using the software at the edge of what it was designed to do. So I'm pretty sure it was not designed to directly communicate with simulation models and use that data as input data. Or let's say we pretend it is some sort of sensor data. But let's say even in those cases, it worked well and robustly. And yeah, I'm very happy with that. I'll just maybe add that why also the hurdle to get into using Inmation was maybe even a bit higher for us. Mm-hmm. Because yeah, we don't use it for the standard, as I said, data connectivity, logging and things like that, but yeah, try to add additional, maybe unusual tools.
So as far as I know, you have other third party applications, so mm-hmm. also MATLAB. I think you're using MATLAB to calculate the models, I guess?
Exactly, so we have two different layers of modeling. We have the, let's say, reactor scale model, where we actually look what's happening inside the reactor and what's also happening on the particle itself. This is done with, let's say, physics-based equations with some adaptation parameters that we got from experiments. And this is all programmed in MATLAB. And on the other, let's say, more plant level, we look at the entire plant, including both reactors for adsorption and desorption, including all of the peripheries such as the vacuum pump, steam generator, things like that. And this is implemented in IPSE Pro. It is a commercially available simulation software where we use, say, custom our own model libraries, and we use the Inmation also as the, let's say, central node to connect the measurement data from the plant, then pass it on first to the MATLAB model, get the results from there, and then pass on, again, measurement data combined with MATLAB results to the simulation model that then actually runs the, for example, the plant optimization algorithm.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, like you said, this is already things that experienced users do, and not using the standard configuration mm-hmm. objects of Inmation, just, let's say, pushing data to the cloud or other easy tasks. So this is really more sophisticated, more involved or deeply involved into your processes. So,
yeah, but still it worked well. And yeah, if we had to maybe roll this out at large scale, maybe we would then implement a simulation model in a cloud with some, I don't know, some API endpoint that we could just send the data to and get the simulation results back. But yeah, in our case, we actually like to have everything, let's say, local, close to us, easily manageable, because we change everything all the time. Of course, I mean, it's still a pilot plant. We try to, yeah, for us, it's not interesting to run the plant at a standard operating point for 8,000 hours a year. We want to get to the edge, try out new things, and yeah, see how these changes impact our results.
Is this also something why you choose IPSE Pro, or what has been the decision path here?
Definitely, yes. Let's say, in comparison to other simulation tools on the market, IPSE Pro, I would say, maybe has less capabilities built in, but it has a very open model development possibility. So yeah, over the past, I don't know, 15 or 20 years inside our research group, we have developed models for this and can adapt them exactly to our needs. And additionally, IPSE Pro also has the so-called validation mode that helps us a lot, where we can not only calculate a, let's say, defined system of equations, we cannot only calculate one operating point inside the plant, but we can use the sensor data that we have, put it into the model, and then have an overdetermined system of equations, which means that we can consolidate different measurements. We can maybe reduce the measurement errors that we have simply by having redundant measurements for the same thing, and then in the simulation model itself calculating a balanced operating point where this is actually then, calculated.
Yeah, the best fit, so to say.
Yeah, that then fits the best.
Okay, wow. If we come back to the very purpose of your project and how Inmation got into this, if you try to describe from A to Z what Inmation does and what maybe especially good or maybe not so good Inmation is capable of, and maybe possible feature requests where you think this would make my life so much easier. Let's discuss on that.
So basically the main thing why we even chose to get the software was that we have a couple of different PLCs, different measurement devices that are not integrated in the PLCs, that we wanted to combine and just to have a centralized data store that really for us can serve as a single point of truth. We wanted to reduce some manual tasks, such as exporting data from different measurement devices, then combining them into one Excel sheet, and then having to work with that. So the main thing really is that Inmation can connect all of these disparate data sources and store them in a centralized way, and that we can then use this data for our different tools and applications. And from there on, then we just started building, try different tools, services, such as dashboards, visualizations for our plant operators directly during the operation itself. Then after finishing specific experiments, we added a reporting tool so that we can, when the experiment is finished after 7 or 8 hours, the operators can really quickly generate a, let's say, 5 to 7 page PDF report where they can see the most important metrics, KPIs, a couple of graphs. This is undertaken with the report generator Inmation. And additionally, we, let's say, looked a bit further, not only at what can help us right now during the pilot plant operation, but how could Inmation be integrated into a larger scale finished product that's actually on the market. And here we're looking more at things such as real-time optimization. So how can the operation of the plant be adapted to changing environmental conditions or maybe changing price conditions on the market, on the electricity market? And additionally, if we are able to gain a lot of data from a lot of plants that are out there, we would also look then into applications such as predictive maintenance, or possibly even try to help our customers with remote access, remote maintenance, if they see that their plant is not running as it should.
Mm-hmm. So combined, everything that you said is now powered or covered by Inmation.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you go into this topic of reporting or dashboarding, is this something that is more or less directly connected to your stakeholders, or is this maybe just for the technical sake? How is that?
I would say both. I'd say the dashboards are actually just for us during plant operation, but the reports themselves are really used when also presenting the results to the stakeholders. And I mean, of course, it would be possible even without animation, but it would just be more complex. And in my opinion, it would just be useless additional effort that can be spent differently. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we don't have a specific way that was prescribed how we should do it, but they're really happy with the way it looks now, because I mean, yeah, it's not just about the experimental data, about the insights that we gain, but also has to look nice at the end of the day and be nice to use.
When I think back to our, let's say, closer collaboration, where we had, I think, multiple meetings in a month to get you and your team running and how to connect PLCs, because I think you have multiple vendor PLCs, so not only Siemens. Okay. As I remember, I think the two other ones.
To be honest, I can't remember right now, but yeah, we have multiple PLCs, yeah. And then we also have these external measurement devices, which, I don't know, so some use MQTT, some use Modbus. It's just a bit of a bit chaotic because again, if we have a measurement device from 20 years ago that still works, we won't buy a new one, but yeah, we use the old one even if it doesn't have OPC UA.
But it's a typical brownfield that's more or less the same in the industry. And yeah.
So yeah, we really wanted a way that could integrate all of these completely different data sources. And yeah, it just works. And it's really nice because now afterwards, if we want to have a new service, it's a really quick either call to the, either a quick configuration in Inmation itself, or a quick call to the web API, and we can have a new service running in a couple of hours, couple of days.
I will start over with my question because I more or less interrupted myself with the question of the vendors, yeah, from the PLCs. our collaboration, when we worked closer together to get you running in reporting, to get you running in Web Studio dashboards, and also connecting different third-party tools, mm-hmm, and how to interact with maybe MATLAB or other applications. For me personally, this was also a new experience because most of our customers don't have the time, even though they maybe equal to your skill level, but they lack of time to be that dedicated to an animation project. So that was for me a very, very, let's say, refreshing experience because I saw you more or less gaining your experience and skill by skill in a very short period of time. And yeah, more or less it was like giving you some bits and pieces. And after 2 weeks, Stefan came back and said, oh yeah, look, I built this and that and I need your aid here. And I was like, oh wow, yeah. Cool. And this was something that I experienced never before from the other customers. Maybe a bit, but not in that, let's say, in this mature setup where we have really complex components, mm-hmm, working together. So from my integrator view, this was really more or less outstanding. And
thank you very much.
And even you didn't have a programmer background, so a technical background, and you more or less love to solve problems, I guess.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't say that it's really just a plug and play, and I wouldn't say I became an expert overnight. But yeah, if you really put in the work, let's say, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, a bit more intense work with Inmation, you can definitely gain a very good understanding of it. And it was worth a lot to get some insights from you, some code examples. But for us, it's simply very, very interesting to have an expert, let's say, directly on site or really close to the plant, because in discussion with colleagues, then new ideas, new use cases pop up, and I can at least have a gut feeling whether it's possible to do that or not. And I can really whip up a prototype in a couple of hours if necessary. If not, I just leave you a message and gain some help. But yeah, if you put in the time, it's not let's say a matter of years until you can use it at a really, really high level. And I really loved the ease of use.
Mm-hmm. Have you worked during the project with the air capture separator? Have you worked with other integrators or other suppliers to solve problems?
To be honest, no. I mean, we had a contact. We said, yeah, it sounds good. We said basically, let's just try it and see how it goes. And basically, everything went very well from the beginning on. So we didn't have the need to look somewhere else. But I just know it from different pilot plans that we have that it's just a bit annoying because it's not our central expertise. So usually it's just some quick and dirty fix where we either store the data directly on the PLC and then just export it as a CSV and then work with it offline. But no, we actually didn't really ever look deeper into this topic.
Okay. What you could say is that the very first prerequisite that you mentioned before, that you need a centralized data store,
yes,
was more or less is a key cornerstone to your success?
Definitely, yes. As I said, we have these various external measurement devices that we use for different plants as well. And we just want one simple, nice way that we have all our data in one space, that we don't need to think about the tags, the timestamps. It should just work, basically, and be safe from any manual user error. And also, on the other hand, we want something that's easy to be backed up. So, it's really no big deal to just regularly back up our measurement data that we get from Inmation. And this is the one great service that made us choose Inmation, but it's the prerequisite for any of the other more advanced digital twin services that we then adapted and used.
Cool. Yeah. So, honestly speaking, really cool, because just because of this thought, I don't know if it came from you or from one of the stakeholders or colleague or whoever, but starting from this and positively ending up there is pretty cool journey.
Yeah. And I mean, the great thing is, I mean, that's also what I tried to emphasize also in my dissertation, was that even with these digital twin projects, you need to start somewhere, and you usually start small, just to be able to prove that it even makes sense to do it. So you choose some small part of it, gather the required data, and develop a service, and you should have that at least some sort of result within a couple of months, so you can prove to your sponsors that this actually works. And then afterwards, you can add on, you can scale, you can add different services. But this is exactly something that works really well with Inmation, because if the data is already there, it's really, I wouldn't say trivial, but it's really very easy just to expand it, make the dashboards a bit nicer, make the reports a bit more extensive, add a new simulation software to the mix, something that we really, really valued.
I would like to try to have a forecast from you regarding your new upcoming project that you mentioned at the very beginning. Yeah, and maybe also then from your new position where you are now the executive researcher, how you, or if you plan to use Stillimation also in your, let's say, in the new semester that's coming, what educational purposes you try to aim for?
Gladys. So directly within the Direct Air Capture project, we want to expand the use case that I mentioned quickly at the beginning. So we want to try to run the plant at different operating points depending on external conditions. These are, on the one hand, environmental conditions such as ambient air temperature and humidity, and on the other hand, prices such as electricity prices on the market. And depending on these conditions, we want to then find optimal operating points, either for a CO2 amount or for energy efficiency, or let's say in the long term then for actual cost of CO2 captured. And this would then be, let's say, first on the local level for one unit or for one plant, but at least in my dreams, what it could then be is that we directly sell the digital twin as some kind of service, such like a software as a service, just digital twin as a service, as a sort of add-on to the physical plant itself, that we then aid the operators either with troubleshooting if something is not working, with the predictive maintenance applications, or exactly with these optimization measures, depending on their location where they put the plant up.
So we could say that a small server unit or PC is being shipped within the 20-foot container running Animation Core service, if you assume a version 1, otherwise it would be a node, as we learned. So we have an Animation Core then for every container, and running everything locally without any online connectivity needed.
That would be my dream, yeah. I wouldn't even say without any connectivity needed, but yeah, it should be able to work without connectivity. But then again, if it's work connected, then the support portfolio could, of course, be even broader. Because then on the one hand, we could use the data from the plant to improve our own models. And on the other hand, yeah, then we could use our models to actually improve the operation of the plants wherever they are in the world.
Sure, yeah.
So that would definitely be, let's say, my long-term dream for this project. Then, within our research group, we will definitely continue using it for various pilot plant applications. Again, for the, let's say, two different types. On the one hand, to support our operators really doing experiments in our lab, again, regarding visualization, reporting, things like that. And on the other hand, we are always looking towards the large scale, the scale up towards industrial plants. So to actually show that digital twins make sense, we always have to think about that and create some case studies, proof of concepts. How can a digital twin be used to improve a large-scale plant that runs for 8,000 hours a year? And to be honest, I like Invation very much. So if it were up to me, I would definitely continue using it. I would love to use it very much, and I hope we continue our cooperation. And for your last question, I am also currently preparing a course on digital twins, which should then be offered within the chemical engineering studies at TU Wien. In that course, I would like to present some general definitions. What is a digital twin? What can it do? How is it used? Simply because this word is a buzzword, is everywhere, but not everyone understands something differently under that term. So I would like to present to the students exactly what I believe that this term means, and then really do some hands-on exercises. So we already developed a model that would then serve as a virtual plant. It runs in real time, gives out operational data over OPC UA, and then I would like the students to connect to this data source, get the data in, store it, prepare some visualizations, maybe even connect it to some simple simulation models, just so they can get a feeling how the workflow there actually is, and what would await them if they chose this career path for their future.
So the students can see the theoretical side, have hands-on experience using an industry software.
Yes.
And additionally, they have the benefit to actually see the plant, even though it's just a small pilot plant, but it's the physical world, so to say, and they can combine everything together.
Exactly, yeah. Because it's still very abstract. I know during my studies, there's something that was a bit missing from it, because you always hear about some large numbers, you hear about, you learn all the theory, but you rarely get to touch something actually, or just to connect two cables together. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I would like to at least offer them the opportunity to do. And ideally with a software that I already know very well and like to use, and something that they then might get into contact with if they are working in industry.
Sounds very promising and very, very interesting. Yeah,
thank you.
If I think about my last question here, is there anything that we have missed maybe? And thinking about this question, I know that the Technical University in Vienna also holds license agreements with AspenTech mm-hmm. regarding other software
yes.
Components, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. Is this something that you also considered within your study, or is this maybe an add-on to have another AspenTech product linked to your Animation setup now?
Well, we'll definitely look into it. Up to now, we've used mostly MATLAB and IPSEPRO, as we talked before, but there are use cases where, I don't know, Aspen Plus, Aspen Hysys would definitely be the better choice, simply because they have better models for some processes, better thermodynamic property data. So yes, it's definitely on our list. Let's say if the right project with the correct, let's say, interesting process chain comes along.
Very interesting, because I personally thought also the director of Asmodee Kaisers, and I honestly never had my hands on this, but I know from other customers in the industry that it's a very well-known and very, very, very properly working software. Yeah, so I thought maybe this could also be a fit for you.
Yeah, no, definitely. We have the license through the academic program, and are using it, let's say, partly for master students, and trying to gain expertise in this direction, and then at some point also really connected with live plant data as our other simulation models as well.
This already drives us into the direction: what will you do with your new role? So I think for nearly half a year now you are executive researcher.
Yeah.
What are the next steps for you personally, or where? I'm not wanting to say where do you see yourself in 5 years, but going a bit into this direction. What will be the next projects for you personally?
Well, yeah. To be honest, now as a postdoc, it's required of me that I actually build industry partnerships, gain new projects, be they really contract research work, or. Or for example, projects coming in through public funding. So I will definitely put my focus on getting new projects in. Personally, I would love to stay in the, let's say, general digital twin space somehow. I would also really like to stay at university. I enjoy the academic freedom I have here. And to be honest, time will tell.
So I think then we should look into this camera or that and say, Asmodee community, we will have some updates for you soon. If you want so.
Glad, yeah.
So yeah, I really think of putting some of your key takeaways and also taking this maybe as an inspirational push from your professional side and to share some insights that can be shared with a broader community, and if possible, saying CTS was supporting here quite well, would be happy to hear that. But in any other case, I'm also happy to have you more or less here on board and continue our collaboration in the future.
Yeah, thank you very much. It was really, really happy working with you. Everything worked really well, and I would love to continue and even expand our work together. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thanks too. Really appreciated that.